Paranoia again. This is Barry Tyker of the Oral History Project. This is tape two of the October 14th, 1993 interview with Nancy Abraham. So we're talking about the towers over on State and Francis.
Yes, and Summer Sessions was located on the second floor, looking out over State Street. The UW Center System was also located on that floor, more on the back side of the second floor.
Were there any other UW facilities in that?
Not on the second floor. There were UW facilities in the tower. Let's see, the West Tower, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this was in 1968.
68, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Who else worked in the office?
Let's see if I can recollect. Clay as the director, Susan Dish with public information, Dorothy Disland with the summer session special student operation, and some other tasks which escape me right now. A secretary, I think at that time her first name was Nancy, I cannot tell you her last name. So when I first came, and then Emily Early was working with Clay Shainfeld with the Center for Environmental Communications and Educational Studies and was housed there. And there were several graduate assistants more related to the Center for Environmental Studies who were there. This is when I first came. There might have been a couple of undergrad students, but that was basically it.
So let's see, Susan? Clay, hey. You, that other woman, Dorothy?
Dorothy, mm-hmm.
And then the secretary, Nancy?
Yes.
Those were the five full-time people?
I think so.
And then some part-time people?
And then Emily Early with the Center for Environmental Communications. And that's what I recall when I first came to that area.
Mm-hmm. Summer Sessions now is such a massive organization. It reaches out and has so many tentacles going out into the different aspects of the university life. How would you characterize it as back then? What was its focus?
Well, in my first year I was trying to get a grip on what it was. And I guess I was helped to get a grip on that by being assigned by Clay to do the annual report within several months after arriving.
Yeah, that'll teach you
something. So that was interesting. There was a lot of, PR going on, which is still the case, to inform students and the general public about the summer session. The enrollment, I wish I had looked that up. I can't remember what it was then, Barry. It's now over 14,000 students, and it's crept up above that sometimes and below. But it was summer sessions, so that the planning was going on in the fall and winter, and then dealing with the non-degree student in the summer only, sort of on the spot, or in the spring ahead of time. And then I can't really speak much for the Center for Environmental Communications, because Clay was involved with that, with Emily Early. And Susan would have been involved with some of the public information, perhaps, also. I was not involved in the first year or two in any of the programming as such. I mean, I was involved in going over to help orient new freshmen who began in summer. And that was sort of a natural given the orientations that I'd been involved in with new freshmen when I worked with Jack Kelswick. And we'd never had an orientation for new freshmen in summer, so we did implement that. That was one of the things I remember being involved with. Early on. But early on it was mainly studies for me and reports. And I think what I remember most is, as Clay involved me more, I remember most being involved with the assistant or associate deans in the Dean's Council. Mm-hmm. And then seeing a growth within that of more discussions about courses and potential course offerings, and then as we move down the road, the new and innovative course proposals calling for those, and Clay holding back some of the summer sessions dollars so that we could fund new courses that would ultimately not only enter the summer sessions curriculum, but also the quote-unquote regular year curriculum. And Death and Dying is one of those courses that comes mm-hmm. to mind and was sort of part of that original.
That was very big. There was that book by, I can't remember her name.
But it was also big in that that was unique and different, and it took some time to persuade people, even the Dean of Letters and Science, who represented the college then, Dean DeRemus. I mean, it was some of the other deans who were persuading, along with Clay and me and others, because there was a concern, well, would people really enroll in a course like that, and might we not be putting dollars down the drain, as it were? And of course, people enrolled, the first time around, over 100 students enrolled. It was clearly something that was needed, and people were ready to enroll in such a course.
So like so many other things in your career, you entered something just as it was about to
yes.
make some outward movements
yes.
in several directions, which I want to get into in a bit. But before we go forward and look outward, or even look a little more at the situation and the people who were there at the time when you came, what did you find out in your annual reports or subsequently about what Clay's predecessor at summer sessions, in the history of summer session mm-hmm. in the past? Had there been a similar focus to what was there initially when you got there, or had it changed?
Well, Adolphson would have been the director immediately prior to Clay. Clay became the director in 1965, when summer sessions for the Madison campus was split back out to the Madison campus. Prior to 65, for any number of years, it had been tied in with the center system and with extension. And there had been a period before that when Falks was summer session dean, where it was housed in the School of Education. And so summer sessions has been housed in different places. I came to work there about 3 years after it had been separated back out and put back onto the campus, as it were. So I think Clay was drawing on approaches that had been used before, but also he was developing a campus committee or advisory council, a dean's council, that was the campus's own, in a sense, at least as I saw it, so that there was representation from each of the schools and colleges having summer course offerings.
So you were really reaching out to each one of the different colleges and
yes.
schools to try to get them to develop.
By bringing them together as an advisory group. And that was something Clay did.
And well, I want to get into the Dean's Council more in a little bit, but during all of his time there, he wasn't full-time with the summer session, was he? Or was he?
Well, there were periods of time where some of his salary was coming from summer and some was coming from another department of the university, like wildlife ecology, I think, but I don't want to be quoted on that because I don't have the budgets in front of me. I mean, there were portions of money coming from different parts of the university at one time or another, but Barry, I really lost track when it might have become 100%.
Well, what about Adolphson? Did he have any other jobs besides summer sessions dean?
Yeah, wasn't he also head of the center system?
Yeah, I think so.
And yes.
Falks was, of course, dean of the
School of Education.
So we're talking about what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
here, summer
see.
Sessions was essentially, even when you came into it, more or less a part-time job for the director.
Yeah, because Clay was involved in wildlife ecology and in journalism and the Center for Environmental. Center for what? Environmental Concerns. Now, Center for Educational Studies, something like that. CSIS, it was mm-hmm. called.
CSIS, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I have not read the history lately, Barry. That's my problem. And my mind is not as good as it used to be.
let's talk for a minute about Clay. He was a very interesting figure and a very important figure. And he was there for how many years while you were there?
Well, he was dean or director from 1965 until he retired in June of 1984. So just short of 20 years as director.
Can you tell me a little bit about his background, his time with in the office?
He was an interesting person to work with. And I really have to say, in retrospect, that I'm not sure that I could have done, as an individual working within the university, as many different things and as many interesting and exciting things if I'd been working with someone other than Clay. At times, he could be real frustrating, and I'm sure I was real frustrating to him at times. but he was and is a very creative individual. And he has a lot of energy, and he has that ability to give assignments and most of the time then not dip in and interfere or muddle it up, mm-hmm. if you will. And that was a really good kind of environment for me to be working in. He would hand one a sheet of paper, and it came out of the military, I'm sure, of what he expected, you know, if you were going to write something, well, write it, rewrite it, look at it again type thing, edit it again. In other words, don't bring me something that I have to really spend a lot of time mm-hmm. reading. Don't bring me something that doesn't have options for decision making, you know, that kind of thing. So you, as somebody working with him, you learn to hone your own mind, and you learn to hone your own writing and so on. He always said I couldn't write mm-hmm. at all. But we know that Clay says that about most people. That's one of the funny things about him. You know, I think I learned to write reasonably well working with him.
Do you attribute part of that to him?
Yeah, I think so. Because it was, well, what does this mean and what are you saying here? You haven't given me possible options here, you know. Or if you've given me this option, what are the rationales for it? You know, what are the benefits? What are the negatives? That kind of thing. So basically, everything I did began to be like that, kind of an analysis. Hmm. I mean, I might have done some of that anyway, because I think I'm fairly analytical, and I am a question asker, and that goes back to that high school history professor. You know, ask the questions. It's the only way you're going to get to the bottom of things, so, yeah.
As an administrator, did you see him as having a direction that he was pushing summer sessions in?
Isn't that an interesting question? Worked with him for 16 years. And sometimes it's hard to know, was some of this my own thinking laid over on his or vice versa? Because, mm-hmm. you know, we all did work, Susan also, right. 16 years of three people working together, you know, is a long time. I think my perception is that what he was pushing for was a summer session that was acceptable to the institution as a whole in terms of quality and breadth of offerings. I think he was pushing for a more inter-college kind of look of a university. And I think when we would discuss creative and innovative course proposals, that was true inter-college activity, with an engineering dean saying, well, I don't know about, you know, this course in LNS, or somebody persuading an engineering dean from another part of the campus, I really think this course that so-and-so in your area has proposed is really something that we need to see offered. So I think that was really a laboratory. Maybe that's my own philosophical bias, but I really saw it as a laboratory for a university at its best.
Was he good at that? Was he good at that inter-college, bringing people?
I thought he was. I thought he was.
Is that something that became stressed more and more as your years at the in the
yeah,
summer session?
Yeah. I mean, I've myself feel very strongly about that, and so I probably also sometimes use some of my persuasive.
Well, that's certainly a very important part. You are
yeah.
a small office. You've got to
yeah.
be feeding off of each other.
Right, right.
To a great extent.
Right.
Is it something that you actively pushed?
I did.
You felt that you contributed to the program?
I certainly professionally pushed that, because I do believe that we cannot be islands unto ourselves. I really do. There's just too much knowledge coming forth, and we just can't be isolated. So, and I myself, I think you can just see from my own personal history, I'm sort of a weaver, not just literally, but figuratively. You know, where can we make things mesh? Where can we bring strands together that enhance another course or another area or whatever?
Now, we've mentioned the Dean's Council, or you have a couple of times. Is that an early manifestation of this, or when did it come? When did the Dean's Council come about? Is that?
It was there when I came.
Oh, was there?
Yeah,
when
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And did you get actively involved in that?
I did. Yes, probably after maybe a couple of years. I don't think I was involved the first year at all as a graduate student.
Right.
I might have needed to present something, you know, a piece of information in a meeting. But yes, I was very integrally involved as the years went by. And my perception is that Clay saw me as integrally involved. And I felt free to offer whatever I had to offer at any time in those meetings. I mean, every now and then, Clay had this military bearing about him that you knew when, I mean, I knew when maybe I'd gone too far and better.
So Clay was at the meetings and you were at the meetings regularly.
Oh, yes.
And the deans.
Yes.
How often did these meetings take place?
Well, they were several times a year. When we were dealing with new and innovative or creative course proposals, we might meet maybe five times a year. But there were always two times a year, always.
When you get into some of these areas, and maybe you can think of some specifics here if they come to you, were you the people pushing? Were the deans going along? Was anybody resisting? How did that whole dynamics work?
Well, in the years that Dean Doremus was alive, he was a strong element within the dean's group. You know,
An element of four.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just for open discussion. I mean, in any group activity, there are always some people who dominate, I think. But George Sledge was part of that group for a long while. And, of course, among George's talents, from my perspective, are to, when people are at disparate ends of a scale, is to come back with, well, it seems that we're here now, and it seems like we could be doing this and this and this. He has that quality about him where he could kind of bring everybody together. And he sometimes played that role in the dean's groups. I saw George do that in other groups too. But I think, by and large, most of the time, over the years, if I look at them on balance, over the years when Clay was there, it was really a congenial, collegial group where ideas were aired and thoughts were shot down or resurrected. I mean, it was very open.
And was it a group where movement was made?
Yes, yeah.
And could you we've talked about it some already, but exactly, could you characterize kind of what exactly was the Dean's Council and you and Clay did or got done?
Yeah, you're asking the tough questions. We did it all the time, so then you don't think about what you're doing. Well, we made changes from the 5-day summer session to the 4-day summer session that came through the Dean's Council to the Faculty Senate. So that basically, if you look at the summer session now, it's primarily Monday through Thursday. There are courses on Friday and on weekends. The 3-week intersession, it's now called the early session, came through that council. And that was, there was a lot of discussion about that because, you know, which kinds of courses are going to fit best within a 3-week early session or intersession, which are not, and probably we better never offer a foreign language course in such a short session, as an example, and Is it going to be better for seniors, sophomores? Those kinds of discussions went on. And when something new or newer were implemented along those lines, we always implemented surveys and studies. And there were extensive studies with the three-week intercession as an example, where permission was gotten through the deans and then into individual professors to go into classes and survey the students at the start of the first three-week intercession and at the close, that kind of thing. And the same with the when we went to the primarily four-day week in summer session. Trying to think of some of the others, those were really big ones. We tried to do something with our concern about the gasoline problem in the early 70s. We tried to do something about commuters and getting carpools and so on, and we just didn't get anywhere with that as an example. So
they were helping to expand the parameters of summer session.
Yes, and in terms of increased library hours as an example in summer, that became, you know, a thrust of a discussion point and then a thrust, and the Dean's Council has, you know, come to this conclusion, and we are requesting that.
Is it fair to say that they were involved in policy then?
Yes, I mean, not all of the policy was such that it went to the Faculty Senate. But yes, either procedural changes or policy where items went on to the Faculty Senate for decision making. Like, you know, that kind of thing, yes. I would say so.
Okay.
Definitely.
And was there any other types of policy in summer sessions that the director was responsible for, that he didn't have to go through the, was his more or less just internal, like, personnel decisions and things like that? I'm just trying to figure out how policy was formulated.
Some of the policy, of course, is in the faculty rules, you know, and regulations.
Right.
And so we certainly refreshed ourselves with those, you know, every year, really, as we were moving into a new planning year. If faculty wanted to change the formula by which people are paid in summer, that kind of discussion always came through the dean's group. And it was never changed, of course, because we would go through past studies and we would go through previous rules and regulations and point out the pitfalls, and deans would point out the pitfalls. So I guess I would say it was a forum for discussion of virtually anything related to summer sessions, from salary formula to length of sessions to grading. You know, do we have the same level of quality in summer as in fall and spring in terms of our courses and the faculty we're teaching? The whole range.
Okay. I think I get it now. Let's get back to Nancy for a minute here. Mm-hmm. Now, you joined as the graduate assistant. You became assistant director, was it, in 1971? Did this mean anything, or was it just a title change, or?
Well, it began to mean more, yes, because at that point I began to be more involved with more of the summer session, and actually by the end of the year of 71, we were looking at the idea of expanding the special student operation to a year-round operation. I think that was in 71, and it became operative, terrible word, in January of 1972. Yeah, so it meant a lot, and then it meant a lot of work also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it meant at this point that you might have been starting to look at the job as more than
a
filler job.
Yes, yeah, it was suddenly like a whole nother flower opened up, you know, and that was another cutting edge of non-degree students year-round on the campus through primarily one office entry point.
When I interviewed Harlan Sampson a while back, he said that The 70s and 80s summer sessions underwent a period of extraordinary growth.
Mm-hmm.
His reign could be determined by the opposite. There was a lot of cutting back. Could you discuss briefly some of the programs that developed during these years, paying attention, particular attention to the Office of Special and mm-hmm. Guest Students?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that to me, well, everything I did in summer sessions was interesting because I felt it was a brushstroke on all parts of the university, you know, to one degree or another. But the special student operation was something that Clay just said, you do it. And so the staff and I, within literally a two-week period after, I think Irv Shane was vice chancellor then, indicated that we would be the office to try this experiment of admitting and enrolling and being the dean's office for most non-degree students year-round. That decision was made like on December 22nd. And literally January 12th, we were up and running. So it meant real fast meetings with administrative data processing, with the registrar's office, with undergraduate admissions to see where what we needed to understand about what they did, with meetings with the School of Education, with Letters and Science. It meant pulling an advisory council together instantly and getting input from them. It meant rigging up an addition to the summer sessions application, as it were, to use it in January. We did it. Now, you can't do that if you don't know the university and you don't have working relationships. And I do think that the basis that had been developed through summer sessions with its intercollege aspect was very helpful. Now, not everyone on the campus was welcoming this experiment with open arms. So we were needing to put our best foot forward, to use a cliche, and to really make sure that our public relations was very positive. And I felt that we needed to be upfront with everyone about what we were doing. So we kept open communications everywhere. And I can't even begin to describe all of the things that we did. And Susan Dish was very involved in that. Dorothy Dislin was still our admissions mm-hmm. person. By then, Bob Bell was part of the staff as working on his doctorate and assisting, and we did have a somewhat larger staff. But we implemented the special student operation year-round without any additional staff. Not one extra person, other than those we then already had. And by then, the staff was, of course, larger than when I came in 1968. But so we took on a major operation.
So you the program was essentially just expanding.
Right.
Incredible rate. While
right.
The staff was.
Yeah,
amazing.
I think.
Astonishing.
I don't know. This is Clay can respond to this in his mm-hmm. Subsequent interview too. But my sense was that maybe they weren't sure, that they being the Hill and even Clay, that this would really happen. Or if it did happen, to what extent? I don't know. This is just something I've been wondering about. Because, and then if you would have increased the staff, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it's the only positive thing I can put on it, because
yeah.
we really worked hard. And we made it happen. And we just saw incredible growth. You know, we had like 270-some students or something that spring. And, of course, it just went on and on after that. And then the guest student program came along almost instantly also. The auditing opportunities for persons at that point 65 and older, now 62 and older, and initially that was cost-free, and there have been various changes in that in charges since then. But so we grew to a point where we had almost 3,000 students enrolled through our office in a fall or spring term. So that put us, that put us behind, LNS, of course, is first, and there was engineering and education, probably put us fourth in numbers of people. Now, we weren't evaluating transcripts and all of that kind of thing that, of course, the undergraduate programs are. But just sheer numbers of people, we approached almost 3,000 students in a term.
So this wasn't one of these preparing for summer things anymore. This was a 12-month operation.
Yeah, and even summer was a 12-month operation, but with a much smaller staff. And so we had to interact with every part of the university in that arena, and did. And again, because not everybody bought into the concept wholeheartedly, we collected data like you couldn't believe, because I wanted to be prepared for any and every question that came along. And we were. We could answer any question that anybody asked at any time about...
So you were go ahead.
About, you know, the operation.
So you're doing all these data gathering at the same time you were developing these
Yes.
programs. What was it about the time that brought all these programs to the surface so quickly?
Well, part of why we went into the special student operation was that schools and colleges on campus were seeing more people wanting to come onto campus in a non-degree status, because there was a course or courses that they needed to help enhance their work situation, or because they wanted to take a few courses to see if they really wanted to return to the university or if they wanted to return in another program. And the schools and colleges felt that it was work. They felt these people should be served, but they didn't feel it was work that they could or should be handling at that point. But was a recognition that changes were occurring. And I always felt it was one of the really wonderful things that this campus did for people. It responded and said, okay, we see this happening, and we're going to make an effort to make it possible for people in the community and the surrounding area to access this campus with less hassle, as it were. And we did. And then we had to collect a lot of data initially because it was an experiment, and we needed to present data and narrative and what have you. And it passed muster, Clay would say, and we were right, right. And so we became official as the Office for Non-Degree Students year round.
So you became that's what I was getting.
Mm-hmm.
You then got
within about
expanded.
A year. Yeah.
Was this something I assume that was going on all campuses around the country, or did
well? It may have been beginning, but part of what we also found ourselves doing was responding to phone calls and letters and visits from people from other institutions wanting to know what we were doing, how we were doing it, could we provide them with background. And this went on for quite a few years. I'm not able to say we were the first, mm-hmm. but I think we were among the first to make ourselves really accessible to that non-degree student and to present the argument to the campus as a whole and the outside world that these students were not registering until all other students had had the opportunity to register within their time frame. So, and we held to that really strictly because we didn't want to jeopardize that admission registration opportunity for the non-degree student. But now it's been cut back a lot.
Right, things
a lot.
Yeah, we'll talk about that
mm-hmm.
next time. But one final question, then I know you have to get going. We've talked about the Dean's Council, and but we haven't talked about the administration up on Bascom.
Mm-hmm.
Did you work much with them in this, and how helpful were they, if at all?
With the non-degree students?
With the whole issue
oh,
that
yeah.
you were going.
I don't think that I sat in lots of meetings with people. I did on occasion with Clay and other people from Bascom, but I knew most of the people, and I was very comfortable whenever I needed to make phone calls or whatever. So if that's the question you're asking.
Yeah, I just wanted to know how Bascom Hill was how much they were involved in this whole process, because you were expanding and going.
They were involved in that they said the experiment should definitely begin, and there should be a report about the effectiveness of it, and they reviewed that report and said and said there will be, you know, we will definitely have an office of non-degree students year-round, and it will be housed in summer sessions. And then at that point, we sort of took our budget title, title name, and made that our office or division title, in Division of Summer Sessions and Intercollege Programs, so that we could get some of that up front, and people would know it was in summer sessions only. So we made that change shortly after. So.
Okay, we're going to end today's session, and we'll be back soon, I hope.